We'll talk about the winners and losers from this week's elections in New Jersey and Virginia and elsewhere, and wonder what message voters were sending to the Democrats, the Republicans, and the Tea Party Republicans. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, November 7th. Should Democrats be celebrating or worried that Democrat Terry McAuliffe's only had a close win over a Tea Party candidate for governor of Virginia? Why did New Jersey overwhelmingly reelect Republican Chris Christie, but also keep a democratically controlled legislature? What does all this say about the 2014 midterm elections and the 2016 presidential race? 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your thoughts, reactions, and questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ross Baker, professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Nice to be back with you again.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back on the show. Well, let's start with the gubernatorial races, and let's start with New Jersey since you're right there. Republican Chris Christie easily defeated his Democratic challenger, Barbara,
Buono. You do vocalize the U with Buono.
60-38%. So what's going on there?
Well, of course, Governor Christie, was elected at a time when there was a tremendous amount of disaffection with the Corzine administration. Former Governor John Corzine had been a rather lackluster and feckless governor, and Christie injected a lot of energy and a lot of charisma into his campaign. It was a big win for the Republicans nationally and made him a hero, certainly. And as time went on, the governor showed himself to be a very engaging person. He had a tendency to go over the top very often, but a very appealing guy in many ways. And I think that that his own political astuteness and his ability to cut deals with Democratic leaders in the state really made him practically invulnerable. And it showed up during the political campaign in which Barbara Buono was deserted by her party. It was actually rather sad to see a candidate of a major party disowned by virtually everyone. There were no national figures in the Democratic Party who came in to speak for her. I mean, not even Vice President Biden, who I understand made a telephone call to Coralville, Iowa yesterday to congratulate the new mayor of that city. It was really rather sad to watch. However, at the same time, voters did something that political scientists like me have said they have almost ceased to do, and that is they split tickets. They voted for a Republican governor and restored the Democratic majority in the state legislature, in the Assembly and the state Senate, which is really quite interesting because what it meant was that the Governor Christie had no coattails. This was a personal victory. It really wasn't a party victory. But it also, of course, puts Governor Christie even more prominently on the national radar as a possibility for 2016.
Mm-hmm. And this is a state that President Obama won last year by a 17% over Mitt Romney. So it truly is a blue state.
Well, Joy, it's interesting. New Jersey does have a predilection for electing Democratic governors as a check on the dominant Democratic Party. And in recent years, we have had, in addition to Christie, we've had Governor Christie Whitman, we've had Governor Tom Kaine, all Republicans, and all moderate Republicans, by the way, because I think there is a suspicion that the governor's office, which is enormously important in New Jersey has one of the few really modern state constitutions, and I say modern, 1949, mm-hmm. which in constitutional years, of course, makes it a kind of a teenager. And I think that there's a real feeling that when you have a Democrat in the governor's office, you really need a Republican legislature to check him and vice versa.
Well, we'll talk more about Christie in 2016 and other issues in that campaign. But let's go to Virginia, where Democrat Terry McAuliffe beat Tea Party candidate Ken Cuccinelli, 48 to 45%. That's just 3 percentage points when he had earlier been, you know, been leading by more than that. How did this race get so tight?
Right. I mean, if you kind of look at the average of all the polls taken in Virginia prior to the election, you know, he would have won with approximately 6%, a 6% margin. That just didn't happen. And I attribute it, frankly, to the government shutdown. I think that, you know, we haven't really begun to examine exactly what effect that's had. There have been, of course, estimates on how much it cost the economy, but I have a guess that it really kind of cast a pall of doubt and suspicion on government generally, and particularly in a state like Virginia, in which, in at least in northern Virginia, there are a, you know, very, very large number of people who either work for the government or work for contractors who have government contracts. And I think, you know, in many ways, I think that, the performance of government, the shutdown, the unfortunate rollout of the Affordable Care Act, I think all contributed to a kind of suspicion, even a hostility toward government, and I think that that really worked against McAuliffe. He was not a strong candidate. Terry McAuliffe, frankly, before this was, you know, kind of a clownish figure almost. In Mark Leibovich's book, This Town, he figures very prominently as a kind of court jester of the Democratic Party. So, you know, he was not inherently a strong candidate. But Cuccinelli was just so far out of the mainstream and could be depicted as an extremist that really made the difference. And I think that, you know, we've known for a long time that looking at the virtues of the winner may be less important than looking at the shortcomings of the loser.
USA Today had a story yesterday with the headline, Warning Flags for the Tea Party and Democrats in 2014. It went in to say how moderate Republicans can win blue states like Christie in New Jersey, and how establishment Republicans thought they could have won Virginia with a more mainstream candidate. Would you say that Tuesday was a victory for moderate Republicans?
Well, I don't know. I'm not so sure. I think that perhaps is a little bit too facile an explanation. I think it was more complicated than that. For one thing, you know, the one thing the Republican Party has going for it is the enthusiasm and passion of the Tea Party. And I know there's a move, particularly in Washington, from people like Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican floor leader in the Senate, and Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, to get the Republican Party to steer away from the kinds of political events that have benefited the Tea Party, notably state conventions and state caucuses, which tend to bring out people who are the most intense voters, the people who are the most ideological voters, and the ones most likely to support Tea Party candidates. But I think that I think we have to let the dust settle for a while before we come to any hard and fast conclusions about whether the Tea Party was fatally damaged or whether it was a victory for moderation.
We are talking about the lessons learned from this week's elections in New Jersey and Virginia. And we'll talk about other races as well. And what they say about the 2014 midterm elections and the 2016 presidential race. And we're welcoming your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, November the 7th. We are talking with Ross Baker, a professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey, talking about the message that voters were sending in this week's elections, turning our attention to 2014 and 2016. And we're welcoming your questions and your reactions, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take our first caller, Victor in Oconomowoc. Hi, Victor.
Good morning. Yeah, this series of elections didn't have much impact for 2014. I think the Republicans will probably lose seats but maintain their majority in the House because of gerrymandering and clustering of population. I think for 2016, what this does is set up Christie as the Republican nominee and McAuliffe's, you know, position as a DNC official and a buddy of the Clintons makes Virginia very problematic for the Republicans. I think the important elections beyond this are 2016 and 2020 when redistricting gets done after the census. I would also just like to really quickly say I think the Senate will stay Democrat, but you'll see filibuster reform. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Victor. A number of points there to cover. Do you agree with that assessment, Professor Baker?
I think Victor is an excellent political analyst.
Yes.
I'm impressed. Yeah, I mean, I think he really touched on some really important points. I think that let's take his first point, which is that the Republicans will retain control of the House. I think that's correct. The Democrats need to win 17 seats in order to become the majority party in the House of Representatives. And people who know a lot more about the individual races than I do, people like Charlie Cook, the Cook Political Report, and Randall Rothenberg, who is one of the outstanding Washington analysts of congressional elections, just can't point to the 17 Republicans who are vulnerable. Because of, as Victor pointed out, gerrymandering and the so-called sorting phenomenon, that these Republicans are, generally speaking, in pretty good shape. The Senate, is more of an open question. The Democrats have not had a lot of success in recruiting anyone to replace a Democrat in South Dakota and a Democrat in Montana. They look to be in pretty good shape in North Carolina. Kay Hagan is a much more formidable candidate, I think, than anybody had imagined. Mary Landrieu seems to be in pretty good shape in Louisiana. There's a question about Mark Pryor in Arkansas. So my guess is that the Democrats may lose a couple of Senate seats but retain control of the chamber. Certainly I think Governor Christie is well positioned for 2016. But it remains to be seen. The question is, can he run the gamut of primaries, which are generally low turnout events, in which the zeal and passion of the Tea Party is again going to be on display? Sure, Mitt Romney was able to do that. It's not impossible for a moderate Republican to negotiate that obstacle course. But I think that on issues like immigration, which is, the path to citizenship is, I think, for most Tea Party supporters, toxic. I think they feel that they regard it not only as amnesty, but as a gift to the Democratic Party. They perceive Latino voters to be overwhelmingly Democratic, and as a consequence, that legalization and certainly the citizenship of those people would be an enormous boon to the Democrats. And Christie has been pretty outspoken in favor of immigration reform in the comprehensive form, in the form that the bill passed the Senate. He also has gotten behind an idea that the so-called Dreamers, the people who were brought to the United States as children by their parents who emigrated to the United States, they're living here illegally, should receive in-state tuition at the state colleges and universities.
Let's talk a little bit about the rocky rollout of healthcare.gov and Obamacare and the continued decline. President Obama, a new poll came out, I guess, showing him with the practically lowest approval ratings ever. How is this going to factor into the 2014 elections?
Well, of course, it's a year away.
Mm-hmm.
And in American politics, a year is almost like geological time. A lot of things could happen between now and then. And, of course, it's important to remember that all the presidents job approval has declined. So is that of the Republicans. So is that of Congress. So they're all down there in the basement together. So the kind of comparative advantage you could usually get when a president's popularity plummets and that of the opposition party either stays the same or rises, you just don't see that effect. So, but I think certainly, I think that the debut of the Affordable Care Act was most unfortunate. But it's something that could have been predicted. And Joy, this is something that I've thought about for a long time. I spent part of last year as a guest of Senator Harry Reid in the Majority Leader's office and had sort of an opportunity to talk to people on Senator Reid's staff about the Affordable Care Act. And I think there was a sense among them that from the very beginning it was kind of misbegotten. I think the idea, was certainly something the president was committed to, but it was never satisfactorily explained to the American people. And there were kind of half-hearted efforts to do it early on, but they lagged. So there really wasn't any consistent campaign of kind of grassroots explanation to the American people. So as a consequence, a change in public policy that had a profound effect on so many people's lives really came on them as a kind of unwelcome surprise. So it is not at all surprising to me that because they were so poor in explaining the effect on people's lives early on of the Affordable Care Act, that the rollout itself would have been so badly botched.
Yeah. Now, Republicans were largely blamed for the government shutdown and linking government funding to the Affordable Care Act funding or mandates. But now with this rocky rollout, have Republicans, gained some ground?
Well, they would have, I think, except for the government shutdown. Had they not followed the advice of Senator Ted Cruz, who, by the way, has shown on several occasions his ignorance of Senate procedures or of the legislative process. I think anybody who grew up with Schoolhouse Rock would have known that you need both houses of Congress to pass legislation, get it signed by the president. And the idea that somehow the crown jewels of the Obama administration, the Affordable Care Act, would somehow get through the Democrats in the Senate and avoid a veto by the president is the sheerest fantasy. Yet people went along with it. And as a consequence, the Republicans were denied the enormous dividend that would have come to them had the rollout in all of its ineptness kind of stood alone. And people would have been able to say, aha, this is definitely the administration's problem. It's the Democrats' fault. Instead, I think that they took some of the heat away from the Democrats.
Well, John in Appleton says he considers himself a moderate conservative. I don't know. That's good. He felt that the Tuesday election was a victory for Republicans like him who felt the party had deserted him in 2012. Do you understand why he would feel that way?
I think so. I think that moderate Republicans, moderate conservatives, the Republican Party is a conservative
yes.
party, but there are gradations of conservatism in the party. you've got people like Governor Christie. You've got some House members, too, and some senators who are inclined, to being more middle of the road. But certainly their influence was very, very much diminished, in fact, almost completely obliterated by the fact that the main driving force in the House of Representatives has been this group of Republicans elected in 2010, many with Tea Party support, who have been really been able to establish a new center of gravity for the Republican Party, much to the right of where it has been.
Well, we're going to have a news break in just about a minute or so. We'll talk more about 2016 coming up in our next half hour. But before the news break, Professor Baker, was there anything else from the election in, say, New York, electing its first Democratic mayor in a generation, or anything else on Tuesday that was a message that voters were sending?
Well, it wasn't just any Democrat who was elected in New York. It was Bill de Blasio, who definitely represents either the left wing or the progressive side of the Democratic Party by a huge margin. And in some ways, it's a vindication of the March on Wall Street movement that took place last year, the so-called 99%. De Blasio is very much a progressive activist. Whether he governs as one, he certainly campaigned as one, so it really remains to be seen. And his victory, of course, was very broad-gauged. He won every demographic group in the city. He even won Staten Island, which, of course, has been the bastion of Republican strength.
Let me hold you there because we do have our news break, and then we'll continue talking about the Tuesday elections and what it means for future elections. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are reviewing Tuesday's election results in New Jersey and Virginia and New York and elsewhere, and looking ahead to 2014 and 2016. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37 on this Thursday, November 7th. Our guest is Ross Baker, a professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey. And we welcome your questions and your reactions to the election results from this week and what it says for future elections. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Is this the end of the Tea Party or just the beginning? Are Democrats poised to take advantage of anything in terms of the 2014 or 2016 elections? What about Republicans? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And I wanted to talk a little bit, Professor Baker, a little bit more about 2016. Did Chris Christie essentially launch his presidential bid with his decisive win on Tuesday?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Joy, that I think that, that Chris Christie's victory speech has been parsed and analyzed more thoroughly than anything, I think, since Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And clearly there are hints in there that he was talking to a broader audience. I mean, the governor's presidential ambitions, I think, are quite clear. And this extends in everything from, you know, the hints in his speech to his lap band surgery to reduce his weight and so on. He's clearly launched on a national campaign. He's taken on people like Senator Rand Paul. We recall this summer, Senator Paul gave a speech on the Senate floor attacking the drone strike activities of the CIA and the Defense Department. And recalled for people the fact that New Jersey was hit so hard by 9/11. So, you know, I think all of those are very, very clear indications that the 2016 is very, very much on his radar screen. And I think we're going to, you know, be able to see now exactly how he's going to go about doing that. And it's interesting because the very fact that he was really able to run in this election without the distraction of Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, I mean, clearly the whole idea of having a Wednesday election in October, special election to replace Senator Frank Lautenberg, just to get Cory Booker out of the same election cycle as he is in, was clearly designed to give him a clear shot at Barbara Buono to run up a huge total against her. And the hope, I think, was, of course, also to change the composition of the New Jersey General Assembly and Senate, which it did not do, but was, you know, clearly had national implications.
Yeah. Will Chris Christie, though, have a hard time getting through a Republican primary season with the Tea Party Republicans not thrilled with him for various decisions he's made, for example, the embracing of President Obama and federal aid after the hurricane?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's in a situation very similar to that Governor Romney faced in 2012, and that is he'll probably do quite well in New Hampshire. I think New Hampshire's his kind of place. It's a state much more like New Jersey. I think given the Republican primary calendar, which of course puts, of course, Iowa is first, and Iowa has always been very friendly to very, very conservative candidates, people like Governor Huckabee of Arkansas and so on. I don't know that he can take a pass on Iowa, but I think he certainly got to build his strategy around New Hampshire. And the problem with the events after New Hampshire are, you know, principally South Carolina, which has always been the rock upon which sort of moderate Republicans have foundered, John McCain in 2008 and Romney in 2012. So, you know, certainly he's in it, but, you know, it's certainly not going to be an easy battle for him. I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of pushback from conservatives who tend to have outsized influence in low turnout elections like primaries.
I wanted to see if you had any take on Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's future. He's got a new book out. He's in a tight race with a Democratic businesswoman for next year's campaign. And he has been making the rounds, presumably, on a testing the presidential waters tour. He did, in fact, go to try to campaign for Virginia gubernatorial candidate Ken Cuccinelli before Cuccinelli's loss. What? Any thoughts on Governor Scott Walker and his chances for 2016?
Well, currently, of course, I think the big buzz is around Christie. I mean, earlier on, of course, when Governor Walker was engaged with his battles with state employees and so on, he was certainly, I think, looked upon as the person of the moment, the flavor of the week, if you will. And certainly the Republicans have a tremendous bench in their governors, including Governor Jindal of Louisiana, Governor Walker. Governor Susana Martinez, by the way, was in New Jersey campaigning with Governor Christie, certainly somebody that people are looking at as a vice presidential running mate for the Republicans, a Latino governor from New Mexico. So the Republicans have an abundance of talent as far as governors are concerned. And I think this just right now, it's Christie's, you know, kind of moment in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm. What about the Democratic side for 2016? Is anyone going to challenge Hillary Clinton's nabbing the nomination?
Well, you know, it's quite interesting. I mean, there's a kind of a small dissenting group that says for one reason or another, perhaps even health reasons, she might not make the run. But from what we've seen so far, I mean, she's made appearances, you know, on behalf of McAuliffe. She certainly is showing the colors, and my guess is she will be in it. But I think that Vice President Biden should not be underestimated. He's been going around and he's been making lots of friends. He's a great retail politician, even better than Hillary Clinton, and vastly superior to President Obama in that regard. At this stage of the game, just going around and, you know, kind of throwing your arm over the shoulder of some Democratic committee person in Iowa is probably golden in terms of building up the kind of grassroots support you need early on in the campaign.
Well, we have a caller who wants to talk about a much smaller race or races. Interesting, though. Carl in Madison is with us. Hello, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I want to talk about the city council elections in Minneapolis and Seattle, because I was very inspired in that I was very inspired by the socialist candidates who ran in those cities. There were a candidate in each city that was a member of a group called Socialist Alternative that ran out and out socialist campaigns, that ran as socialists and came in very close second. You know, were kind of neck and neck with Democrats in their respective districts and did very, very well. And that's very inspiring to me, because I think we're going to see more challengers to the two big business parties come up in the future, such as that, because people are just fed up with the economic situation in this country and the inability of the capitalist system to do anything about it. And it really changes the game. It really changes sort of the conversation to have those candidates run. I mean, in those cities, there was a minimum wage. You know, the socialist candidate didn't win in Seattle, but a minimum wage ordinance was passed that is like a $15 minimum wage. And a lot of that conversation happened because those candidates were there and challenging the status quo. So,
yeah, thanks very much, Carl. So a reaction to that, Professor Baker?
Yeah, I think Carl's put his finger on something really interesting. In the New York mayoral election, a group called the Working Families Party had a very, very strong influence. In fact, they managed to elect the city advocate, which is actually the person who is the, in a sense, like the vice mayor of New York, a woman named Letitia James, who is very much very closely identified with the Working Families Party, which, by the way, is kind of a spinoff of the Acorn movement that was so roundly criticized by conservatives a few years ago. And as I said when I was commenting on the New York mayoral election before, I think that in some ways the March on Wall Street movement really found its expression in this election in New York City. I can't comment on the municipal races in Milwaukee or Minneapolis, but I do think that certainly there is a concern, I think, among Americans about income inequality. And I think you saw it in the fact that in New Jersey we did something rather remarkable. By a lopsided vote, we put into our state constitution an increase in the minimum wage, which would be adjusted accordingly by to compensate for inflation. You know, I personally disagreed with the idea of putting it in the Constitution. I just don't like the idea of cluttering constitutions with things like that. But clearly it wasn't going to pass the legislature, and it was a referral from the legislature to put it on the state ballot. So, you know, this is something I think that progressives can take some heart in, people like Carl.
We are talking with Ross Baker, a professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey, talking about this week's election results and the messages being sent, and welcoming your reactions and your questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you make of Democrat Terry McAuliffe winning the governor's race in Virginia, but not by much, 3 percentage points over the Tea Party candidate, Ken Cuccinelli? How about in New Jersey, the big win by Chris Christie? He easily defeated his Democratic challenger, 60-38%. What does this all say about next year's midterm elections, about the presidential race in 2016? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're also, or have been anyway, talking about how the Affordable Care Act and other issues may factor into next year's vote. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Ross Baker for the rest of this hour. He is a professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey, and we are breaking down this week's election results and wondering what they mean for future elections, the 2014 midterms and the 2016 presidential. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do these wins mean that voters are rejecting or not the more conservative views of the Tea Party? How will the Affordable Care Act and other issues factor into next year's vote? What other questions do you have about the election results and what they mean? Peter in Appleton is our next caller. Hello, Peter.
Hi.
Yes, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm a first-time caller. I'm just calling to make a comment about Chris Christie's ability to kind of reach across the aisle. I mean, I normally consider myself a Democratic-leaning voter, and his response after the hurricane to kind of accept Obama's help and really kind of condemn everyone who was trying to vilify Obama during it. His response afterwards was kind of like a disbelief that people weren't really understanding when he was trying to be helpful. So I think that if he were to run, he's one of the only potential Republican nominees compared to Scott Walker and Paul Ryan.
Yeah, so he appeals to a Democratic-leaning voter like Peter, Professor Baker.
And I think he appealed to a lot of Democratic-leaning voters in New Jersey. He won 19 of 21 counties in New Jersey, and some Democratic strongholds, like my own county, Middlesex, which is, if anything, a machine county. It's Democratic Party is omnipotent in this county, yet he carried it. And I think that the embrace on the Jersey Shore a year ago was very important. I think it certainly helped President Obama enormously. And it involved a certain risk for Governor Christie, but I think he was able to explain it in terms that almost anybody can understand. That here was a state that had really been ravaged by this storm. And the president was coming in bearing federal aid. What governor would have shown disrespect to the president under those circumstances? It was a reasonable thing for him to have done. And although it was seen as a gesture of sort of high-level bipartisanship, it was really a very, very understandable common courtesy that he was extending to the president. And I think just by doing that, he endeared himself to a lot of people like your caller.
Yeah, what about the recent news story, a video that went viral anyway, of Governor Christie scolding a teacher, saying, lumping her into a "you people" insult and telling her to do her job when she was questioning him about some education funding?
Well, he sort of made a career out of that. He's very confrontational, and people actually like that. They don't see it as bullying. They see it as being somebody who doesn't pull his punches. And I think that it enables him to stand out from politicians who, out of politeness or out of an unwillingness to confront a constituent, kind of back off from things like that. There aren't many politicians who will do that. And I think that that's seen as one of his strengths rather than one of his shortcomings.
Another caller, Randy in Key Wascom. Hi, Randy.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. When it comes to the election in Virginia, I think a lot of people are way off on it. You've got a less than wonderful candidate that the Republicans had, very little money. He was outspent at least 5-1 by McAuliffe. And then besides that, the so-called libertarian candidate in there was nothing more than a Trojan horse. Majority of his money came from one of Obama's money handlers in Texas. So you've got an election that was written off by the Republican Party, no money in it, and McAuliffe narrowly wins the election to somebody that had no financial resources and basically the dirty campaign that McAuliffe ran. Basically, they put out lies about the other candidate and just kept pounding them even though they were shown to be completely false. So, yeah, a dirty candidacy, and he still just barely won.
Thanks very much, Randy. We have another caller who wanted to talk about the negative campaign that McAuliffe ran. Do you know, Professor Baker, if there was a lot of lies and negativity on McAuliffe's part?
Well, you know, I think that negative campaigning is now accepted as a necessity. I think that you know, what you don't want is what are called attack ads. But I mean, certainly, you know, what my colleagues who study voting behaviors tell you is that this is comparative rather than a kind of character assassination. But the problem for both Barbara Buono in New Jersey and Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia was their national parties deserted them. It wasn't just Buono who was abandoned. It was Cuccinelli also, that he was very early on tagged as a loser. There were high-level decisions made. They were not going to exert any heroic effort to try to save him. I'm not sure exactly what the basis of Robert Sarvis's libertarian challenge was all about. I'll accept your caller's assertion that he might have been encouraged by an Obama contributor in Texas. I just don't know much about that. But you know, he did win 7% of the vote, and presumably those votes would have gone to Cuccinelli. So the fact that there was a spoiler in the campaign, I think, also produced a result that was so detrimental to the Republicans.
Yeah. Now, Randy says that you can't really read a whole lot into McAuliffe's win there, and it was very close. We only have a couple of minutes left. One, though, area demographic where it wasn't so close was women. At least I've seen that pointed out, that women helped McAuliffe get elected. Is that going to be women's issues? Is that going to be a big deal in 2014 or 2016, for that matter?
Sure. I mean, I would contrast Cuccinelli's very, very aggressive anti-abortion positions and anti-contraception positions with those of Christie. Governor Christie is pro-life. Governor Christie, you know, is a practicing Catholic, but those issues for him have never been at the forefront. I think you really have to kind of comb his speeches to find any hint of, any particularly aggressive positions on abortion or contraception, whereas they were at the forefront of Cuccinelli's campaign. And I think this is, you know, really that women consider this very hostile. And I think as a result, you saw a huge gender gap in Virginia and Christie winning women in New Jersey. So I think that if you put those issues at the forefront of your campaign, you're likely to engender a gender gap.
Yeah, well, we'll leave it there for now. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure, Joy.
Ross Baker, professor of political science at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Thanks very much to Bill Martins and Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We will be talking with a guest philosopher in our next hour about the trolley problem. And then tomorrow at this time, we're going to be talking with a guest from the National Toy Hall of Fame, and we'll take a look at this year's inductions and welcome your thoughts on your all-time favorite toys. That's tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.